Okay, so we've got Yo Steve introducing the speaker. The speaker's Wayne S. So come on up, Yo Steve.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
All right. My name is Yo Steve, and I'm an addict. And you know, along this road that you be traveling down and everything in recovery, what, you doing it?
Yeah.
You got it? All right. Anyway, I was in one of those things. I was getting ready to, you know, take it off. But it's real crowded here. You guys are excited, man. I'm really, really excited about introducing the speaker. I know I set the table last night. Now you're going to get the meal. All right? So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Wayne to the podium, please.
Hi, fam. My name is Wayne. I'm an addict. I want to thank the Northern Alabama area for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank Mason and Mo and Kayla and everybody that helped in making the hospitality. I got some great hospitality here. It's the first time I've ever been here, but bear with me for one quick second. So, it take a lot to get up here and share and be transparent about who you are, what you suffer from, what you've been through in a room full of people that you don't know, but you do know, right? The theme of this is that when at the end of the road, right? It was out of the darkness and into the light, right? I'm a literature type guy. I kept my literature with me. I might not open it, but I might open it again, right? I just believe in, like Linus with his blanket, you know what I'm saying? I may not use it, but just in case, I like to be covered. So I like to say something we got to get me in tune, man. It's from the Guiding Principles member section, 10th tradition. It says we don't always share an elegant and tidy message. We don't rate or please each other sharing. Many members connect with a raw and emotional expression, while others connect with a quiet and thoughtful share. Sharing in a meeting is both personal and courageous no matter what we share. And there's no such thing as sharing perfectly. I'll say that last part one more time. There's no such thing as sharing perfectly. So my story is my story. My clean date is 3/15/95. And I'm really clapping for y'all because I couldn't have done it without you. See, I understand the weed of this program, man, and one of the things, I'm born and raised in Washington, D.C. I got clean in Ohio. So what I'm going to try to get to is like the end of the road because, you know, after being clean for the period of time I've been clean, it wasn't just the first end of the road was the use, the dope, right? But my experience has been, since I've been here, there's been many end of the roads, right? So the first end of the road started something like this. Born and raised Washington, D.C., come from a good home. My mom worked at the Pentagon. My dad worked at the post office. He went back and got a degree. I come from the household of where the old school ass whippings. It wasn't no children's services back then. I think children's services just got created. Because back then, everybody took an ass whipping. You know? And wasn't nobody, I wish somebody had called them on my parents, I'm telling you. You know? Because I got that old school ass whipping with extension cords.
Yeah.
Hot wheel racing trucks. Shoes. My mom had a shoe and it was like a boomerang. And she would whip that joint off and throw it at your ass and rock you. And then catch that motherfucker at the same time. I thought my dad had something wrong with one of his arms because you could be at the dinner. See, I don't understand. Like, kids today say what they want to eat and what they won't eat and all that stuff. Yeah. Whatever hit that table, you better eat. I remember the one time that I was like, I don't like no rutabagas. And my dad would sit at the end of the table. I sat all the way down here. And it looked like his arm grew about 5 inches, man. He came down, smacked me, man, hit me across the thing and jumped. And I rocked back in the chair. He said, whatever she put on this table, you better eat. Right? So I came in here with some traditions. I came in here with principles. I'm just telling you the truth. Right? Because I came from a lifestyle where we didn't show our emotions. Right? They used to tell you stuff like we talk about misinformation from misinformed people. Used to tell you like stuff like real men don't cry, right? In the streets they would tell you never show your sucker ass emotions, right? Never let your woman get out of pocket. You know what I'm saying? Don't chase and replace her. All that misguided information, right? That left you with a faulty belief system, right? So by being in a household that was abusive and witnessing my parents, witnessing my parents fight on the front lawn. Like my dad was a heavy drinker. He was a big man. He was about 245 pounds. He had no neck. And he looked like he lived the side of a building. Everybody in the neighborhood and all the people he came up, you know, respected him. And respect was driven by fear, right? And so being a kid who was insecure, I learned all that now since I'm here, right? So being a kid that felt inadequate, that didn't feel good enough. I'm the middle child. My older brother was 4 years older than me. My younger sister is 10 years younger than me, right? And so being the middle child, I would always be the one at home. My little sister was too young to know anything about anything, and my brother was in the streets, right? And so my parents used to fight on the front lawn. And so when they were fighting, had these battles and everything like that, they would call the police and they would lock up my dad. And I come from the neighborhoods where all the kids would sit around and they'd be outside on the corner and they'd be watching your parents as all this be going on. And I'd be peeking through the windows. And then the next day, I would go out in the neighborhood and they would make fun of me. Because of, you know, kids can be real cruel. They would make fun of me about everything that was going on. And see, that was my first experience with being powerless, because I remember when it was going on inside of the house, I watched my dad go through a door and grab my mom and bring her back through the door like the door was made of paper mache. Right? And I had to call the police on my father. Right? And they locked my father up again. And I remember my dad saying something that stuck with me for a long time, right? And when they was locking him up, he looked at me, and he looked at my mom, and he said, oh yeah, I'll be back. And the police said, you can't threaten nobody in here. Da, da, da. He said, man, fuck you, this is my house. I'm gonna bond out, I'll be back. And he came back, and when he came back, he whipped my ass. And that started the cycle of never feeling that anybody was there to protect you, right? No matter if you was doing the right thing, you still felt exposed to the harm that was coming and nobody was to protect you. I don't know if y'all can get where I'm going. So feeling inadequate,
yeah.
Number one. Not being good enough because I was, you know, nappy-headed, buck-tooth, all that stuff. I come up in the Rico Suave era, you know, light-skinned, pretty boys. They call them red bones, you know what I'm saying? All that kind of shit like that. And I never felt good enough about who I was. My brother, he wasn't a light-skinned guy. He was kind of caramel complexion, but he was a Don Juan. You know, he had the real wavy hair. He had the goatee. He had the hair on his chest. It was lined up, you know, hair. He was a ladies' man, right? And so I admired my brother, but I didn't know how to get there. So my first experience with honesty ain't the best policy. See, I was raised, right, to lie. I was raised to be dishonest, right? And if you don't know what that raising looks like, check this out. Well, my parents, the people used to come by and be doing pamphlets at the door and all that kind of stuff like that, right? And my parents, my mom used to be like, tell them we ain't home, right?
Yeah.
So you look through the mail slot and say, my mama said she ain't here. When the bill collectors, because you know, old school, they had the landlines, rotary phones. Bill collectors call, and you're supposed to ask permission to answer the phone any other time, but they know the bill collector was calling, and you answer the phone, and they ask to speak to your parents, and you say, they ain't here, right? So then I come home, and I go to school, and I come home, and when I come home, I tell you a lie about what I did in school, and now you want to beat the shit out of me for lying to you, but it's okay to lie for you. So walking through all this and never feeling comfortable about it, I was a kid that got in a lot of trouble a lot of times in school. I mean, like, I went to Catholic school, then I got put out of Catholic school, and I had to go to public school. And when I was in public school, they made fun of you how you was dressed. And my dad was like, if you got put out, he ain't changing the clothes, right? So you're going to wear them same clothes that you went to in Catholic high school, you're going to wear that same shit to public school. Now, everybody in the neighborhood knew me and knew how I got down or whatever. But the other people that I was gathered with didn't know, right? And see, so in Catholic school, it was public transportation. So I used to have to fight to get on the bus, and I would have to fight to get off the bus. My school was in the middle of the hood. It was on 18th and Rhode Island, right? And it was the hood right there. And they had all these public schools around it. So I was used to fight, right? I wasn't winning all the time, but I learned how to fight, right? Everything that went on emotionally with me, I was taught by my parents, right? By watching the video, what's going on in my life, that if you have a disagreement, you fight. If you don't know how to communicate your feelings, you fight. Whatever go on, somebody disrespects you, you fight. So fighting came natural to me. I boxed for a time period and everything like that. And so by the time I got to high school and I was good as an athlete and I got put out of school like mid-year. And the one time that I seen my dad's emotion was when I was in front of the superintendent of schools. And I watched my dad, and he was a proud businessman, man. He was making like six figures when that wasn't common amongst black men. And so he had came off his job, because my mom would never come off her job. But he came off his job, and we was in front of the superintendent of schools, man, and my dad was just sitting there quietly as they was talking about his son like he was an animal. And on the ride home, where normally he probably would have bounced my head off the window, all he did was, I seen a tear come down his eye. And that was the first instance of knowing that how my behavior had affected others. But I didn't know how to express. There was nobody to talk to about the feelings I was going through, about the stuff that was going on in my home. I couldn't talk to my parents about what they were doing and how it was making me feel. Because kids was seen and not heard. Right? I come from the era when they turn around and you start crying about your feelings, whatever it is, they would tell you to shut that crying up before they give you something to cry about. So, like, these are the belief systems grew up with, right? And now I get to getting into the streets. And when I'm getting into the streets, right, I'm real smart, but I think I'm smarter than the streets. And what I'm here to tell you is the streets is undefeated. I don't give a fuck how smart you think you are. You don't get to Narcotics Anonymous being highly educated in the streets. At the end of the day, the streets won everybody. Right? And so being a promising athlete and being good in school and all that kind of stuff like that, right? Went in the Air Force. I did my thing in there. I got married. And that was my first experience of dealing with heartbreak and living life on life's terms. I'd never known what it's like to get your heart broken. And I got married, and my wife married somebody else while she was still married to me. And I was 3,000 miles away in England. We had a son. She was in the service too. And so I had to deal with those feelings, and I didn't know how to deal with them, so I found myself at the end of a bottle, right? And now I get out the service and I'm angry as hell. And I went to jail in the service a couple times. Now I get out the service. Now I'm really angry. I'm angry at everything, right? And see, I haven't even gotten in touch with the God concept, man, because the God I grew up with was the punishing, fire, and brimstone. If you don't, my grandmother beat that in us. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how to go to God about nothing, right? And then I get out, and then I'm in the streets again. And now all of a sudden, I became Nino Brown, right? But I was Nino Brown for about 20 minutes. And then I was Pookie for the next 6 years. Now follow along with me. We're talking about at the end of the road, right? So we're talking about a cat that had the right upbringing. The right home, the right status, the parents and all that shit, the cars in the driveway and everything like that. And I found myself in the hallways, in the projects of Montana Terrace, with everything I owned in one of them carryout bags. And I'm sleeping under the steps. And then it's 2 degrees outside. And the wind come down the hallway and I ain't even got a coat because I sold it for one more. I got a pair of Fila tennis shoes. It's like 24 inches of snow outside. And everything I owned was in that bag. And I said that prayer, like we always say, God help us, or God help me, right? But that wasn't my prayer. Because I had a concept of God in my life, man, and what he was doing. My prayer was, God, just don't give up on me yet. Please. My first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous was back in 1988. And in that time, man, the only reason I went because it was somebody I used to sell dope to that said they was clean and I didn't believe it. He had a key tag. It said, nah. I thought it was like saying no to drugs or something. It said, nah. I didn't know it was Narcotics Anonymous. So I went to the meeting, right? And now I'm in the meeting, and see, this is where it gets tricky at, right? We're talking about the end of the road. So this is where it gets tricky at it, because I didn't understand that this was a God-given program. And while I'm in there, I couldn't identify, and I understand the newcomer. When the newcomer comes in here, and with the language we speak in is foreign. I'm talking about surrender, faith, acceptance, and all that. Man, what were you talking about? You know, unmanageability. Unmanageability, man, where I came from is just fucked up. And so as I'm going and navigating, I'm in this meeting, and they, and in D.C. at that time, the meetings, they would everybody would recite the whole step. You would say the step, and they would say the whole step, the whole group. So I feel at a disadvantage. I'm already coming in here feeling like I'm inadequate. And inadequate ain't got nothing to do with no sex, man. Inadequacy feels where I don't feel I'm enough, right? I'm not enough, right? And so now I got a whole meeting full of people talking in language I don't understand, and it scared me, and right? And so the only part I paid attention to in the meeting was when they said, get somebody's number. If you feel like using, you may not have to use again. Now, I'm in and out of the streets. I'm putting in work. I was like, oh, that's what he got me here for, right? So now I can give everybody my numbers, right? So I was telling cats, like, yo, if you feel like using, call me, you know what I'm saying? You know, I got this and that, right? I'm just telling you how you play with this program and the price you didn't pay. It's jokes, but I'm telling you the price that I paid. Because after I got out that meeting, I got knocked, and I ended up doing 2.5 years. Wow. And when I doing 2.5 years, before I did the 2.5, what I did was I went on the run. And in the process of being on the run, I became my best customer. See, I'm too much of a coward to put a gun to my head and pull the trigger. I was too scared of needles, so I'm fucking around trying to shoot myself up. I'm not into seeing my own blood. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't about to cut myself and fuck up. You know what I'm saying? So I felt I could OD. See, back then, it was something like, you know, you could bust your heart smoking. So I felt I could OD, right? But when I was doing that, trying to be an OD, I crossed over that threshold. And now I don't know how to get back. And the false illusion of me being Nino Brown kept me going back time and time again. I ran in and out of here for 6 years. See, I know we got members in here sometimes that take things, and it's cruel, man, but it's true. I'm just giving you, like, if there ain't newcomers in here, like, I just want to share off the rip. You know, recovery ain't all rainbow and blowjobs, right? Like, they're, you got to have tough skin in here. I'm just telling you the truth. If you're going to stay, you're going to find a reason to stay, right? And the reason I found to stay was because, it depends on the severity of the ass whipping, whether or not Wayne going to stay clean. Like, how bad was it? Right, so at the end of the road, right, Narcotics Anonymous was the last house on the block, but it was on a one-way street. It wasn't no turning around. I burnt up all the bridges.
Yeah.
My family disowned me. I couldn't go home. I could look. See, so I understand the newcomer being in the meeting, and we tell them dumb shit like, "Don't say nothing, right? Just listen." That's contrary to what our literature says.
Yeah.
Right. It talks about in recovery and relapse. It talks about how, yo, look, at first, no longer comfortable with our using friends, and both captivated and intimidated by the fellowship. Right. We dispel the fear of sharing by sharing. Right. We dispel this fear by sharing. We share for this reason. Right. And what's Narcotics Anonymous program? Right. It talks about all we care about is what you want to do about your problem and how we get help. How the fuck we know what your problem is? We telling you to shut up. Right. I'm telling anybody, man, as you feel like you feel up, man, that anonymity is cool until we get started playing with your clean time. I'm just telling you my experience. Right, clean time bullies, literature bullies, all that kind of shit like that. Though, be quiet, you know, I done spilt more dope than you did, all that shit like that. But that's creating a separation and a gap. Yeah. It's creating, look, it's somehow saying that because I've been here for 30 years and you've been here for 2 weeks and you can't stay clean, that somehow my story is better than yours, right? Or we got the one white key tag group. I understand, man, if you've been here with one white key tag, man, I'm grateful that you stayed. I'm grateful for all that. But I'm telling you this, right? Just because you got one white key tag doesn't make my experience any less valuable than yours. I ran in and out of here for 6 years. I had to have a thoroughly whipped ass man to stay. Right? And like the God of my understanding saved my life, but look, Narcotics Anonymous showed me a new way to live. I understand what it's like to be walking around here clean and crazy. Feeling that I'm going to survive on my clean time. Let's get into the literature just a little bit. So, if recovery is an act of change in my ideas and my attitude, how do I get a new idea if I ain't got no new information? How do I change the thinking that always brought me in here? See, with 30 years, a couple rounds of steps, a couple meetings, sharing all over, whatever it is like that, right? I'm not in the fall. This the same brain that told me it was a good idea to break off a car antenna and stuff it with charboard because Pookie don't take no shorts. This disease is arrested, not cured. Whenever you think you got enough information, I'm going to say things like you, we, and all that kind of, I'm talking about Wayne. I can share about Wayne, I can't share about you, right? But whenever Wayne think he got enough information on the disease of addiction, you in trouble. How am I going to have enough information on a disease that was present long before I knew it was here? It says some of us believe that, you know, this disease is present long before we picked up. I'm part of the some of us. Because other people don't believe that, right? But just so we make an even playing field, there's a part in recovery and relapse that people quote all the time, right? They say, never have we seen a person who lives in Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. And we say that, but like, I'm not a one-line guy. You got to read the page. Yeah. Right underneath that, it says, as addicts, we are subject to emotional and spiritual lapses that lead us defenseless against this drug use. As addicts, we are all subject to relapse. Oh, ain't nobody in this motherfucker drug proof. Look, check it out. You may think I'm just picking out words. In the guiding principles, the third tradition, right, the member section, it says, one fact still remains, colon. Now, if you know anything about grammar structure and sentence structure, whenever there's a colon, that means whatever's about to follow is very important. It says, no matter how far we are from our last one, each of us is one bad decision away from the next one. What does your next one look like? When at the end of the road. See, at the end of the road came when at first we started out with the drug usage, right? And how it drugged me, right? And then later on, after coming here and being here and not working those steps for a while and just thinking that showing up to meetings was good enough, my thinking drugged me. Now self-righteousness gonna drug me. Like, what are your defects of character that you don't even know that you get, look, you haven't even identified it, right? You don't even know what the fuck you suffering from. You think that when I first got here, I thought I had a drug problem. I thought it was that crack brought me to my knees. I never looked at what drove me to. In the first step, it talks about the interpersonal unmanageability. The outward unmanageability is visible. You homeless, you lost your job, you lost your woman, you lost your wife, you lost whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? You can't keep a job, you can't keep a woman, you can't, evictions, all that shit. That's easy to describe. That's unmanageability. What drove you to think that it was a good idea, right, to spend the electric company money and then get like 12 candles? where did that come from? Right? What made me think that I could have a girl over here, like I have A, B, C, D. Now A gonna find out about B, so I gotta keep B cool, keep her on the side, then you got C. Because C is gonna be the one I write, but now C can't do that because I gotta do it with D. But when D come up, that's a lot of fucking work. We talk about the vicious cycle. Right? Says we seem to never outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. Kids think like that. Right? Through step work, when I'm telling you, I got here, I was 28 years old, right? And when I was 28, when I stayed stopped, and it was very scary to find out that I was a boy living in a man's body. See, we strive for, in our literature, it tells us we're striving for emotional maturity. Right? Like, how bad was it? And what was it that really drove you to the dope? Do I have enough ability to be honest enough to turn around and tell somebody? See, they say three things that are indispensable: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. That's true. But what I believe is that other things are indispensable as well. Meetings, literature, sponsorship. They're indispensable. You can't recover without them. So in the process of me turning around and starting the spiritual awakening stuff, I remember one part of the literature that kind of locked into me, and I still hold on to it, right? And it was talking about how ego is used to control us in all sorts of subtle ways. Anger is to my present reality. Resentments are reliving past experiences again and again. And my fears to the unknown. See, it was the fear that was driving a lot of my decision making. Like, I couldn't tell you that you hurt my feelings. Right? If I look, the real men don't cry. My dad is not the best. I love my dad dearly, man. Like, that's my dude, right? But he is not the guy I go to for relationship advice. Tell him. I remember one time one of my kids' moms, man, and we had broke up, and, you know, it was over, and I got all emotional, and I'm like, I'm calling him on the phone, and he's like, man, you all right? And I'm like, yeah. He said, what, was something happened to one of the kids? I said, nah, man. He said, well, you get hurt or something? You hit it? I said, nah, Dad. I said, you gonna let me get it out? He said, nah, what's going on? I said, she gone. He said, say what? I said, she gone, man. She ain't gone back. You crying over a broad? He said, man, next time you come home, we're taking a DNA test. That was the last call my dad got about relationships. Now here go the kicker. So not having information, the right information on how to conduct a relationship, I ain't talking about romantic, I'm talking about any relationship. I'm left to try to figure it out on my own. Just the same brain that told me to get a car antenna and break it off. Not being able to be transparent with another man because I feel it's weak to share with him how insecure I feel about a lot of different things. How I feel that, you know, I'm not enough, right? So you didn't have conversations like that where I came from. So that street mentality I brought in here. And in the process of bringing it here, I was suffering in silence. Now you get clean time as a result of not using no dope, right? So we talking about getting years clean without using no dope, but ain't changing no mindsets. Clean time is what we celebrate here. Thank God they don't give key tags out for recovery. That shit would change up. I know in my life it would. Right? So as I'm driving through this insanity, right? And insanity is not doing the same thing expecting different results. That's not insanity. Right? If I go to work every damn day, I expect to get a paycheck. If I pay my bills on time, I expect my credit score to go up. That's doing the same thing, right? Insanity is repeating the same mistakes, expecting a different result, right? Now, the other part of it is making the same mistake and already knowing the results. See, that's why I stayed getting high for so long. Like I was saying earlier, like, we'll say a lot of mean things to people and draw back on our energy. This has been my experience, because you can't stay clean, right? And as you can't stay clean, and next thing you know, you come in the meeting, they be like, oh, look at that motherfucker again. He ain't going to be here. He going to be here for about 30 days, and then he going back out again, right? And you know, so I don't risk pouring into this individual, and now the individual starts to feel it. That's a very important question in the third tradition, the guiding principles. It says, have I ever done anything to anybody that made them not want to come back to NA?
Wow.
See, well, we sometimes, and I'm saying we, I'm talking about me, we sometimes get so in touch with our clean times and all the accolades and all the things that we have accomplished and gained, right, that you lose sight of the newcomer, right? I'm not the guy that's going to be bullshitting in the meeting, right? Because the guys that's in the meeting, right, a lot of them, sometimes, you know, we talk about the exact natures, right? And we talk about the still sick and suffering addict. And we always identify the still sick and suffering addict with the person that's struggling to stay clean, right? The person that lost a loved one, broke up in a relationship or something like that, right? But the still sick and suffering addict may be the motherfucker who can't get off their phone in the meeting. The still sick and suffering addict may be the motherfucker that can't shut up in the while the meeting's going on. The still sick and suffering addict is the guy who can't keep his hand off the newcomer. Right? There's still sick and suffering addicts all around. Like, what does suffering look like? So in the process, like, and I was one of those guys early on because I wanted to fuck my way through my feelings. I didn't have any other information.
Yeah.
I know I'm the only one. Shit. You know what I'm saying? And here go a newsflash. I got a newcomer in my story. Huh? Look, I know I'm the only one. But see, I learned something about that. See, God got the newcomer. And see, you don't understand what's going on when you talking about the end of the road. You don't understand what's going on when you laying down with somebody, right, and feel like shit when you get up, because the same things they're suffering from is what you now suffering from. The disease is spiritual in nature. So the solution must be spiritual as well. What I got tired of doing was I got tired of paying the spiritual ass whipping. See, the physical ass whipping, you know what I'm saying? You get knocked in your jaw, you get cut. I got a lot of bullets in me. I got some razor marks, stuff like that. I know the gauze to put on it. I know the salve to do with it. All that kind of stuff to heal from it. But that spiritual ass whipping.
Yeah.
That inner knowing.
Yeah.
Huh? It describes it in, November 7th meditation. Right? In the Just for the Day. It says, whenever we go against, we no longer have to read signs and badges anymore, right? We learn how to come with God's will, right? We understand what God, we learn to trust our intuition. That's what it says, learn to trust our intuition, right? And whenever we go against God's will, there lies the queasiness in our stomach and many sleepless nights. Wonder why you can't sleep at night. You might want to do an inventory. See, self-esteem is not something just I build. Like, look, I found a couple keys in here, and one of the biggest things where to build self-esteem, the literature describes it, the way to build self-esteem is by helping somebody. Right? You got to get outside yourself. Now, here's the other part. They said that, you know, the only way we keep what we have is by giving it away. They ain't talking about your conversation.
Yeah.
If you thought it was just your conversation, reread your third step, because it says it's shown in how you live, not in how you share. We all can share our ass off. But what's your recovery look like in real time when you leave the podium? Steve introduced me, right? If my daughters had to come up here and introduce me, what would they say? If my mama had to come up here and introduce me, what would she say? My dad, all of them, right? So I ain't got no worry about it, because I know I do the best I can, right? So he go to the hit for the hurt, the harm, and the healing. So I got an older boy, and he couldn't stand. He was the only kid I had in active addiction. So let me get this straight. So I got 6 kids. Okay, good. Nobody ain't say nothing. All right, cool. I got 6 kids. I had one when I first got clean. I had the other 5 in recovery, right? So we know one thing for sure, my pullout game is trash. And I was trying to fix all these, look, I had 2 daughters, and their mom wasn't the best in the world, right? And so I had been raising my daughters since they was 4 and 2.
Wow.
I know how to braid hair. I knew how to, look, I found out and discovered what to get them when they had their cycles. I done dealt with broken hearts, broken bones. You know what I'm saying? I've been a father, not a baby's dad. I've been a single father for 30 years. My oldest boy is in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's an ex-gang member. He's selling real estate. Now, when he came home, I'm just going to jump around here, because I mean, I don't want to take up your time. So, but I think the newcomer needs to know, like, if we always talking about the yes, right? And yes is short for you're eligible too. And we always talk about the yes, and we always giving the fear-based message, which is, if you go back out, you may die. If you go back out, you may get stuck out there. If you go back out, you may commit some homosexual acts. If you go back out, you might get... All that shit is like, is a fear-based, right? But what if I stay? Let's talk about what if I stay. If I stay, you're eligible too. You're eligible to get a degree. You're eligible to get your kids back. You're eligible to get a job. You're eligible to be a homeowner. You're eligible to be a business owner. You're eligible for every damn thing you got. Because the literature backs it up. The literature backs it up by saying, look here, when the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen. Lost dreams are awakened and new possibilities arise. The shit that I thought I would want in my life, I've been selling myself short. You could have never told me I've been doing what I'm doing right now. So as a result, I'm just telling you, man, like I had this son, and he was in active addiction with me, and so my son grew up with a lot of philosophies that he's seen his dad do. My son seen me fighting, my son seen me shoot, all that shit, right? And look, I can't blame him for the man he turned into be when I taught him how to do it. Like, look, no matter what they do, you had a part to play in it. Even clean, man, and my daughters are making bad choices, right? They ain't never seen their dad get high a day in their life. It doesn't exempt me from the responsibilities I have for when I smoke. I played a part in some of it some kind of way. Whether you want to tell the truth about it or not, I know I played the part. Whether I baited them too much, whether I can't take them too much, like look, I played a part. But I'm just going to talk about Junior real quick. So Junior I had him since the time he was 5 years old till he was 18. He went back to his mom in Vegas, right? He came back to me when he was 23 years old, right? And when he came back to me after being 23, he had been to the penitentiary. But he forgot that his dad had been to the penitentiary too. So he come home with a different attitude. And he tried. That ain't work out well for him. Right? But here, check this out, man. I remember, see, this is why I knew recovery was changing me, right? This is one of the times. I remember there was a time when I could whip one of my kids and put my hands on them, I wouldn't feel no remorse. But to realize I had to, like, I was dealing with a grown man. He was 23. To realize that my my communication skills have gotten so bad with my son that I had to physically do something to him. It really broke my heart. And I remember it was all over. He wouldn't get a job. Right? He was just riding on my back in my coattail. So he was living in an apartment I was paying for, and I told him, like, you got less than 30 days, man. Either you're going to get a plane ticket or a bus ride, not a plane ticket, a bus back to Vegas, or you're going to get down at the homeless shelter. The choice is yours. But you got 30 days or less to do it. And he called me up on the phone about 2 weeks later, after we had this physical altercation, and he said, Dad, I got a job interview. Can you take me to? I said, yeah, all right. So I show up down his house. I grab him in the car. I remember like it was yesterday, man. And we were riding up the street, Main Street, man, and it's Capital University. And I looked over at him, and it just came across me. It was like, man, you ain't never prayed with your son, Wayne. And I pulled the car over. And I said, man, give me your hand. And he jumped back like this, like thought he was going to go back into it again. And I said, nah, man, just give me your hand. I ain't going to do nothing to you, right? And I asked God. I asked God to do the same thing for my son that he had done for me.
Yeah.
He's a good kid. He's a misguided kid. And my son ended up going and he got the job, and he ain't stopped working since. Before that happened, though, the reason I prayed with my son, because I see what the power of prayer could do, I probably was 3 years clean. That's the same son that when he was 13 years old tried to commit suicide. And I remember sitting at the foot of his bed, right, and asking God, like, is this what I got clean for? Right? So we all talk about no matter what, and that shit sound real cute to you got a no matter what. Levenstub talks about you got to be okay with or without. That shit sounds Gucci as fuck until you got to be with or without. We always talk about saying fuck my feelings, save my life, until it's time to fuck your feelings and save your life. Right? And I remember, like, I was about 3 years clean, and my son was we were struggling, and we was living in a one-bedroom apartment, and he was living in, he would get the couch Monday through Friday, and then Saturday I would get he would get the couch, and on the weekends, I would get the couch, and he would get the bedroom. And I remember I was going to school, and I was getting ready to graduate, and I fell, like, short on my last trimester. And I was short on financial aid. See, the end of the road for me always comes back to me crying and praying.
Yeah.
I don't know about nobody else.
Yeah.
My recovery ain't nothing but crying and praying. It's a lot of action, but it's crying and praying. And I remember, like, going to school and them telling me that I couldn't go back because I ain't have enough financial aid. And I, once again, here come the old bugaboos of feeling not good enough. Right, and so I'm sitting there and I'm going back and forth. They keep putting me out, and then the last time they was taking me up there. But hold on, before backing that up. But before I did that, I called my hero, my dad, and I asked my dad for a loan until I got my refund check. And my dad said, Wayne, it's a lot of things I would do for you, but giving you money ain't one of them. But I had been in the process long enough to know that when I hurt people, I don't get to pick and choose how they hit. And I had to wear that. And I, like I said, I went back to school, and on the last time they was getting ready to escort me off the property, the lady stuck her head out for financial aid. She said, is that Wayne? Come on down here. Right? She said, I got him. And she said, look, as a result of you being a vet, right, and your GPA, we found a grant that was going to allow you to finish school. So you're going to graduate on time, right?
Yeah.
And look, I was excited. I'm excited just like y'all excited, right? And I'm clapping and everything in there, right? And I'm on my way out the door, getting ready to skip. And she said, oh, yeah, by the way, you might want to give your dad this check back. And so that was when I made the decision that it ain't no matter what. See, I belong to a part of a come hell or high water. See what I'm saying? Because it wasn't about the check. It wasn't about the grant. It was that God had changed the mind of the man who I had hurt the most to believe in his son one more time. And no matter how I feel, no matter how bad it gets, I won't hurt that man anymore. All right? My mom is, I got mama issues like a motherfucker, and my mom never showed up, like I told you, when I was messing up in school. She always said, call your dad, call his dad, call his father, call his dad, call his father. And see, I used to feel slighted because I was like, my mom never showed up, but I didn't understand. It took me having kids of my own to understand that my dad was the only one who could control me. So she did the best she could do to turn around and release me to him, right? And look, I had the biggest resentment in the world against her because of that, right? And I always felt that, you know, I didn't have no, I'm 400 miles from home. I'm born and raised Washington, D.C. I got Cleveland, Ohio. I ain't got a mama, daddy, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, nobody. I got the kids who I made, and I got the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I got the God of my understanding. And I used to always feel slighted because, like, in all my darkest moments, the only thing that was there was the God of my understanding in me. And I always felt like, man, like, shit, all I got is God in me, man. All I got is God in me. And then my perspective changed. See, when your perspective changed, your perception changed. When you change your thinking, you can change how you view things, right? And so when I change how I view things, like, check it out. If God is all I got more than enough. Yes. If God is all I got, the odds are stacked in my faith.
Amen.
Right? So I learned to stop picking from the dented can aisle. I learned to stop looking at the ground. I can walk in any room like God said. I don't worry about your clean time, how much money you got, what you did, and all that shit like that, because I know from my, look, I know from my own experience, all that shit can fit in the stem. Right. But years later, right, that prayer that happened with my son, that prayer that happened with my dad, right, years later, now my daughter, who ain't never seen her dad get high a day in her life, now my daughter's getting high. And my mama that wouldn't be there for me, check this one out. God will turn around and fix you right in front of the people that broke you. God will put you back together in front of the people that broke you. So that same mom that I turned around and couldn't stand, that same mom that always slighted me, I felt slighted on her. Guess what? That same mom is in my living room right now. She get everything she wants. She got hospital care coming through the house. My daughter's in there taking care of all that, right? That's the same mom that says now, I want to go to Wayne's. Tell my sister to send me to Wayne. The same guy that used to beat my ass that I called the police on and all that shit like that. I go home every other weekend to take care of my dad. I make sure he gets to his doctors. I'm talking about how, check this out. I stopped looking at what I wasn't getting and what I didn't have, and I started appreciating what I do got, right? Yeah. Like, check this out. All these problems I got, and they get real heavy in here, like holding a look. Everybody see how they look. They look at what you got on and what you drive and everything like that and thought you came in recovery like that, right? They see the duck going across the water. They see it real smooth and everything like that. They don't know how hard that duck paddling underneath to stay afloat. Like, I work hard, bruh.
Yes, sir.
I own two companies. And check this one out. And then we talking about breaking it. And I ain't trying to brag or nothing. I'm just talking about what God did. It ain't nothing Wayne did. I just had the willingness to show up. When I first hit Columbus, Ohio, the first place I got high on was a company, a corner called Main and Wilson. First place I copped at. Right? Years later, they had a recovery club on the same corner. And I tried to stay clean, try to get clean in it. And it didn't work. But then years later, I've been clean for a while. I done went back to school. I got a couple degrees. I got one in electronic engineering. I got another one in network and communication management. Right? And so I became pretty successful in starting my own business. Pest control, got another painting, commercial cleaning and remodeling company, right? Had one for 20 years, had another one for 15. And I got a chance to be an investor on a 192 unit apartment complex, right? That was new build, that was built on that same corner.
Yes.
The same corner I stood on. The same corner I couldn't get off of, right? I'm just talking about how God will turn around and give his greatest strength. Look, man, I complain a lot, man, about a whole lot of things, and lately I was feeling like I was slighted and all this kind of stuff, man, because I had sponsees that wouldn't show up and all that kind of shit like that, and they was hurting my feelings, but I was placing expectations on them, and it was unrealistic. See, if I answered the phone every time you called and hoped that you would turn around and answer the phone with me, I did it for the wrong reason.
Yes.
If I showed up for you every time that you needed somebody and thought that you was going to show up for me, I did it for the wrong reason. If I did anything and with any expectation that you would do the same for me, I did it for the wrong reason. And what I learned how to do in here, man, check it out. At the end of the road, after being hurt and harmed and all that shit like that, I learned how to protect my spirit and protect my heart. Because people will get close to you just to get close to what's close to you.
Yes.
See, just because you're in the circle don't mean you like, you know, it says the circle got room for every manifestation of the recovering person. Right? But just because you're in the circle don't mean you're in my corner. It's a square inside there, boss. You're going to need a couple good corner men on that motherfucker. And look, when I say corner men, I mean people just going to tell you the truth about you. I don't need nobody to stroke my ego and shit like that. Like you come back to the corner, you in a boxing match, your eyes all big, your lip busted and everything, and you telling me, yeah, I got you right where you look, you got them right where you want them, champ. Nah, I say, motherfucker, you need to get out of there. You want me to throw this tile in? Like, you getting your ass whipped. You might want to try another sport. But the recovery process has been a lot of joy. It's been a lot of pain. But I understand that people are, talking about Wayne, right? People only change for two reasons. Right? Either you learn enough that you want to, or you've been hurt enough that you have to.
Yeah.
With the relationships, what I learned is I stopped looking for the same motherfucker that broke my heart to fix it.
Yeah.
You gotta go, look, they talk about in the living clean, they talk about the journey is always inward. Right? And just because I got some clean time and I've been doing this, and check it out, man. What I'm doing right here is no more valuable than the person who made the coffee. It's no more valuable for the person who set up the chairs. It's no more valuable to the person who's doing the registration. It's no more valuable than the person who did the hotel. And so check it out. We all find our niche. And people will think that, you know, you were born with a microphone in your mouth or some shit, right? Like I put my name in the basket and all. Like, man, look, they called, I showed up. Look, I've been blessed. And I get to show up.
Yeah.
I get to take care of my mom. I get to take care of my dad. I get to be there for my using daughters. I get to, boss. Like, I get it. I get to. Like, no matter how it look, it's still working in my faith. The glass ain't half empty. The glass is half full. Let me tell you a couple things out of this book real quick. The shouting got me started. Y'all don't mind if I read from the text, do you? Nah, people get real offended when you grab a basic text or a book or Narcotics Anonymous literature in an NA meeting. I got a book, you know, I need to read it. They don't say shit to the pastor when he open his shit up. Don't say shit to me. I ain't been to none of them places and tell them, like, close the book, share from your experience. So this is in the fifth edition, God and Principles member section, right? It says, when we live the program, read the literature, listen to the readings, and practice these principles and apply our traditions, we really don't have to worry about our message. Our recovery will speak for itself. Each of us carries a message. We are all always examples of recovery in action, whether we mean to be or not. See, when they say We're under no surveillance at any time. They talking about law enforcement. Because if you don't think nobody watching, you're good sharing ass. You got another thing coming. They want to see how you handling those situations because you share your ass off. They want to see how you handle your pain. They want to see how you handle your successes, right? Like what? Look, what that? I told you, your good sharing ass. What that recovery look like in real time? There's a lot of things I do. There's a lot of things I've done, man. But one thing I don't play with this program. Right? Because people's lives are like, I prayed about 5 times before I got up here. Right? And it was, and look, check it out. You want to know how your recovery work and how many people praying with you? Right. Huh? How many people call you when they need somebody to pray for them? Right? And so coming up here, man, I don't take that lightly. And see, the reason I prayed before I came up here was because I need to get out the way because people's lives are at stake. I don't want to be egotistical. I don't want to turn around and just start riding on no bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't know what the hell I was going to share about. I was nervous and shit, man. I was shaking like drugstore dice. This shit don't get no easier. You know? Because my only hope, man, look, my only hope is to focus on those who've been through our dilemma and found their way out. Right? Like, if you ain't got no experience in something, stop giving advice about shit. Right? If you ain't got no experience in nothing, man, like, look, step to the side and let somebody's ass come through the whip. Right? Because a lot of times in a lot of situations, I would look for messages to come from certain people. I can't segregate who God speaks through. If I believe God speaks through people, I can't segregate who he speaks through. Check one out. Here go real. God will put your solution inside of somebody you can't even stand just to see how humble you're going to be to go get it. The humility part of this program, man, like I was telling Steve earlier, I believe, I forgot who we were talking to, but I believe, right, and this is one of the things that come up with my experience, that God has designed us to ask for help. Right? If it's about unity, how do you have unity and you solving your own fucking problems? You can't have no unity. That's disunity. Right? If I'm creating a wedge between you because of my clean time, if I'm creating a wedge between you because your defects are somehow different than mine, right? Because we do that in here. Yeah, you can sell pussy, Viagra, food stamps, all kind of shit, but you sell some dope, oh shit. Take his ass out the meeting. He don't need to be in here. Right? What is an addict? An addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs, they're getting and using. They don't say shit about smoking, shooting, using. I'm giving it. Third tradition, guiding principles. It says, other ways we use once we are clean. People, places, things, feelings, behavior, and drama to avoid facing ourselves. The dope boy need this just as much as the dope user. Using is using. Oh, y'all don't believe that shit. They look at me like, he lost his goddamn mind. But I'm just telling you, you looking at one. Yeah, I'm an ex-terrorist. I'm an ex-dope boy. Y'all know what a terrorist is? They talk about the mask must go. Right? But we still got the clown suit on. So the clown suit is like, you know, we playing the games and all that kind of shit like that. Terrorism is when I'm using other people for my bidding just so I ain't got to have a feeling. I'm running havoc through people's lives. I'm a recovering terrorist. Been there, done that. I'm just grateful that God didn't give up on me. Because this, I'm just telling you, man, like there's a lot of times where you standing in the darkness and you trying to find the light, right? And you in the, look, I done had a lot of basements in my recovery. Yes. But one thing I understand, the only way out the basement is take the steps. You got to take the steps, right? You're going to have to turn around and become transparent. And I'm saying you, I'm talking about Wayne. Wayne got to become transparent. Because in order to stay clean, you got to come clean. I had to tell somebody what I was doing. If I want to get better, right? Look, I don't worry about relationships like that no more because, look, I read my literature enough and I practice enough. It says sometimes our behavior can get in the way. This is the romantic relationship section. So sometimes our behavior get in the way, right? We'll notice the warning signs in a relationship long before the relationship even begins. That we're picking people that just ain't appropriate for us. The other part, if you turn the page on the other side of the joint, says allowing ourselves to be present, we can have a relationship with a person rather than a fence. That's just realigning with what it says in recovery and relapse, because people always say relationships can be a terribly painful area. Read the whole motherfucking chapter, boss. Read the people, right? It says relationships can be a terribly painful area because we tend to fantasize and project. And then we become angry and resentful when our fantasies ain't fulfilled. Yeah. So what's a fantasy in reverse? A nightmare. Huh? When you pull the panties off that fantasy, we're going to find out what you really got. Yeah. Just telling you today, man. Yeah. Because, like, well, I'm just talking about my experience, right? We're talking about the end of the road. I'm talking about the end of the road of some behaviors. I'm talking about the end of the road of some spiritual neglect. Right, like I'm not understanding that the solution was spiritual in nature. I was looking for physical solutions to spiritual problems. I ain't talking about just look. And then when you're doing certain things, people, like I was saying, they'll judge you on your defects, not on your character or the merit of your heart. You know, the same people that was talking about, you know, you fucking your way through your feelings. Number one, I ain't stick nobody up for no pussy. But when the process, you know what I'm saying, they'll act like, you know, what you're doing and everything like that is somehow like you just turn around and cut somebody's head off or whatever. Nah, I ain't do none of that, man. Like, she was willing, I was willing. Like, what's the problem? Oh, you just community dick. Those pretty strong words from somebody who got some Section 8. I'm just grateful for it all, man. I'm just telling you, I'm grateful for it all. Right? Like, I love the fact of being able to communicate with my kids and not trying to control my kids. I love to watch how the program comes to life in other people's lives, right? Like, ain't nothing like walking through somebody through 12 steps. Ain't nothing like watching a guy that used to be a bum, right, now become a homeowner. Right? Ain't nothing like watching the guy whose eyes as big as golf balls, right, when you first met him, and now he's like a CDC2, whatever that weird shit is, all counseling, helping her. I mean, it's just amazing to watch the program come to life. And I'm grateful to God that I was able to be here and witness. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, listen, everybody in this room is the evidence, right, that God answers promises. Look, everybody in here, not just answer promise, everybody in here is evidence that God answers prayer. Whether you knew it or not, whether you came in here, somebody prayed you in here. It wasn't nothing. Look, there's a lot of people right now that's either dead or in the graveyard. Huh? See, what you ain't grateful for, somebody else been praying for. There's a lot of people in the graveyard and the penitentiary for the rest of their lives that would love to have the opportunity and the chance that each one of us got right here, right now. I'm grateful. Right? And it shows in my actions. Man, look here. I know it's an election year. I don't know if I said anything that really gonna help anybody, man, but I hope I did. Right? Our message is real simple. It's that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I'm an addict named Wayne, and I pass.
For Wayne.